The End of an Avocation. We went racing together many more times that year and other years after I had worked in the early mornings, and Hadley enjoyed it and sometimes she loved it. But it was not the climbs in the high mountain meadows above the last forest, nor nights coming home to the chalet, nor was it climbing with Chink, our best friend, over a high pass into new country. It was not really racing either. It was gambling on horses, but we called it racing. Racing never came between us. Only people could do that. But for a long time it stayed close to us, like a demanding friend. That was a generous way to think of it. I, the one who was so righteous about people and their destructiveness, tolerated this friend that was the falsest, most beautiful, most exciting, vicious, and demanding, because she could be profitable. To make it profitable was more than a full-time job, and I had no time for that. But I justified it to myself because I wrote it, even though, in the end, when everything I had written was lost, there was only one racing story that survived, because it was out in the mails. I was going to races alone more now, and I was involved in them and getting too mixed up with them. I worked two tracks in their season when I could. It took full-time work to try to handicap intelligently, and you could make no money that way. That was just how it worked out on paper. You could buy a newspaper that gave you that. You had to watch a jumping race from the top of the stands to Autel, and it was a fast climb up to see what each horse did and see the horse that might have won and did not, and see why or maybe how he did not do what he could have done. You watched the prices and all the shifts of odds each time a horse you were following would start, and you had to know how he was working and finally get to know when the stable would try with him. He always might be beaten when he tried, but you should know by then what his chances were. It was hard work, but at Autel, it was beautiful to watch each day they raced when you could be there and see the honest races with the great horses, and you got to know the course as well as any place you had ever known. You knew many people finally, jockeys and trainers and owners and too many horses and too many things. In principle, I only bet when I had a horse to bet on, but I sometimes found horses that nobody believed in except the men who trained and rode them that won race after race with me betting on them. I stopped finally because it took too much time. I was getting too involved and I knew too much about what went on at Engain and the flat racing tracks too. When I stopped working on the races, I was glad, but it left an emptiness. By then I knew that everything good and bad left an emptiness when it stopped, but if it was bad, the emptiness filled up by itself. If it was good, you could only fill it by finding something better. I put the racing capital back into the general funds, and I felt relaxed and good. The day I gave up racing, I went over to the other side of the river and met my friend Mike Ward at the travel desk in the Guarantee Trust, which was then at the corner of the Rue des Talions and the Boulevard des Talions. I was depositing a racing capital, but I did not tell that to anyone. I didn't put it in the checkbook, though I still kept it in my head. "Want to go to lunch?" I asked Mike. "Sure, kid. Yeah, I can do it. What's the matter? Aren't you going to the track?" "No." We had lunch at the Square Louvaux at a very good, plain bistro with a wonderful white wine. Across the square was the Bibliotheca Nationale. "You never went to the track much, Mike," I said. "No, not for quite a long time." "Why did you lay off it?" "I don't know," Mike said. "Yes, sure I do. Anything you have to bet on to get a kick isn't worth seeing." "Don't you ever go out?" sometimes to see a big race, one with great horses. We spread pâté on the good bistro bread and drank the white wine. Do you follow them a lot, Mike? Oh, yes. What do you see that's better? Bicycle racing, really? You don't have to bet on it. You'll see. That track takes a lot of time. Too much time. Takes all your time. I don't like the people. I was very interested. Sure. You make out all right? All right. Good thing to stop, Mike said. I've stopped. Hard to do. Listen, kid, we'll go to the bike races sometime. That was a new and fine thing that I knew little about. But we did not start it right away. That came later. It came to be a big part of our lives later when the first part of Paris was broken up. But for a long time, it was enough just to be back in our part of Paris and away from the track and to bet on our own life and work, and on the painters that you knew and not try to make your living gambling and call it by some other name. I have started many stories about bicycle racing, but have never written one that is as good as the races are both on the indoor and outdoor tracks and on the roads. But I will get the Velodrome d'Hiver with the smoky light of the afternoon and the high-banked wooden track and the whirring sound the tires made on the wood as the riders passed. The effort and the tactics as the riders climbed and plunged, each one a part of his machine. I will get the magic out of demi-fond, the noise of the motors with the rollers set up behind them that the entraîneur rode, wearing their heavy crash helmets and leaning backwards in their ponderous leather suits. To shelter the riders who followed them from the air resistance, the riders in their lighter crash helmets bent low over their handlebars, their legs turning the huge gear sprockets and the small front wheels touching the roller behind the machine that gave them shelter to ride in. And the duels that were more exciting than anything, the putting of the motorcycles and the riders elbow to elbow and wheel to wheel up and down and around at deadly speeds until one man could not hold the pace and broke away and the solid wall of air that he had been sheltered against hit him. There were so many kinds of racing. The straight sprints, raced in heats or in match races, where the two riders would balance for long seconds on their machines for the advantage of making the other rider take the lead. And then the slow circling and the final plunge into the driving purity of speed. There were the programs of the team races of 2 hours, with a series of pure sprints in their heats to fill the afternoon. The lonely, absolute speed events of one man racing an hour against the clock. The terribly dangerous and beautiful races of 100 kilometers on the big banked wooden 500-meter bowl of the Stade Buffalo. The outdoor stadium at Montrouge, where they raced behind big motorcycles. Lennart, the great Belgian champion that they called the Sioux for his profile. Dropping his head to suck up cherry brandy from a rubber tube that connected with a hot water bottle under his racing shirt when he needed it toward the end, as he increased his savage speed and the championships of France behind big motors of the 660-meter cement track of the Parc du Prince near Atuel, the wickedest track of all, where we saw the great rider Genet fall and heard his skull crumple under the crash helmet as you crack a hard-boiled egg against a stone to peel it on a picnic. I must write the strange world of the six-day races and the marvels of the road racing in the mountains. French is the only language it has ever been written in properly, and the terms are all French, and that is what makes it hard to write. Mike was right about it. There is no need to bet, but that comes at another time in Paris.